Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Today's show, folks, marks the return, the long-awaited return that a lot of you people have asked for, of our letter bag, where we take your emails and questions and answer them to the best of our ability. And we'll be doing that shortly. Just a few news items to get to here in the beginning before we delve into the old letter bag. First off is the rumor, and it's gaining some momentum, that Drew McIntyre may be moving on from the WWE. Now, normally when someone's contract comes within, you know, a year to 8-9 months, the WWE obviously attempts to re-sign them. And this has been the case with Drew McIntyre, but from what I'm hearing, they are far apart on especially money. And Drew McIntyre not happy with creative as well. So we have a circumstance now by which the WWE is probably in a situation where they're panicking a little bit and saying, you know, we're not going to promote the guy. We're not going to give him anything good if he's leaving. So this is why you're not seeing a lot of Drew McIntyre, I think. There were some rumors he was a little beat up after the WrestleMania match. That could be true. But that's not the reason that he took his picture down from some of his social media accounts and wiped out any reference to WWE. That's not a good sign. Now, Drew McIntyre, very, very doubtful, would go to an AEW sort of a federation. I don't think the style suits him. I don't think the federation itself suits him. I think he would be a guy there that would get a little lost in the shuffle again. I think he'd be big for a month, 2 months, and then it would be, you know, buried. I don't think he wants to make that move. But he has other options. Certainly has other options. And monetarily, the only place that would probably equal it is AEW. I guess he could go to Japan if that's what he wanted to do, but I'm not sure he wants to do that either. Now, this could be a big bluff on his part. But then again, folks, Drew McIntyre's creative has been a little skewed. Now, in all fairness, when they hooked him back up with Sheamus, I thought they were doing something pretty good, actually. And I really thought they may actually have a quality, really top quality, brawling sort of a tag team here. And it would be good for both of them. Sheamus certainly, you know, has his share of injuries, and tag team suits him quite well. Drew McIntyre maybe doesn't want to do a lot of tag teaming. I don't know. I think Drew McIntyre truly feels he should be at the top of the card, main eventing, possibly a championship run. And I don't think he thinks the WWE sees that in his future. Now, could this resolve itself? Yeah, of course. Of course, if the WWE offers something much more to his liking, monetarily especially, it will probably resolve itself. And I have a feeling that it will resolve itself anyway. I think right now Drew McIntyre is playing hardball, testing the market, making sure the WWE is well aware he's not set on staying there. You know, I remember it wasn't all that long ago that I believe I was a baseball player who had spent a couple of seasons with a particular team. I think it was the Mets, actually, and he made a statement. Oh, I just want to finish my career here. I'd love to just finish my career. And he's all of 22, right? And people were saying, well, that's very nice, and isn't that wonderful? And I said, you know, here's why it's not wonderful. If they really think you feel that way, they're going to lowball you. They're going to say, you want to stay here so bad, you'll stay here for the money we're offering. If truly you have a loyalty to this team, then we don't have to be the top bidder. And I think it's even worse in wrestling. So I think Drew McIntyre clearly understands he has to show I'm going where the biggest money is and my best opportunity. And the WWE is going to have to figure out if they think he's worth it. Now, right up until probably, I don't know, 8-9 months ago, maybe just about a year ago, he was one of their top merchandise sellers. Still a lot of people who are big Drew McIntyre fans. So I don't know what kind of money he's asking for. And I don't know what kind of creative freedom he's asking for or what he is asking for as far as his future in the WWE. But I hope that both sides come to an agreement because I think actually they're a really good fit. I look around and I try to imagine Drew McIntyre in another federation, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's going to work. There's just something about the WWE and his style of wrestling and everything that kind of gel Mike. And I think this is probably where he's best off, maybe not financially at currently or as good as he thinks he should be, but I think this is where he's best off at this stage of his career.
Right. And to tell you the truth, if he would go anywhere else, it might be back to TNA, to Impact. But again, I don't think they have the money for him.
Right.
You know? And so it's either going to be there and – heck, he may come back and say, hey, look, to get me back, he may pull a Cody Rhodes, you know. You're going to have to give me the title, you know. Give me a title run, you know, at some point to get me back. And that might be the linchpin. Put me back at the top of the card at least. I mean, I'm 30. What is Drew McIntyre, 38, 39 years old?
About that, yeah.
So he maybe has 2 to 3 good years left in him as a top of the guard type of guy left in him. So, and we know that at some point Roman is going to go away somewhere. Fade into the sunset. So Sheamus is. So they're going to need somebody there with some charisma and the ability to at least for a short-term basis be that top of the card guy until somebody like a Jey Uso is ready to strike out away from the tag team, right?
Yeah. See, that's the thing about Drew McIntyre. You know, if you want to compare it to baseball, which sometimes we do here since we're all baseball fans, Drew McIntyre is almost like that guy who could be a starter, could be one of your everyday players, but he makes a great utility player too, where you say, so-and-so's hurt, or this person's, you know, sick, or we didn't count on losing this person. We can fill in with Drew McIntyre and the fans will still be fine. Yeah, he's that guy. If you had to give Drew McIntyre a short title run because something happened, everybody would be fine with that. I don't think he's your long-term guy. But if you were backed into a corner and said, oh, well, plans have changed. Something bad happened. We need to get the belt off so-and-so. We need somebody a few months until somebody comes back or whatever. Yeah, he's your guy. He's your guy that the fans would be like, yeah, we accept that. See, I don't think he's that guy that the fans are like, we're paying big money to see him. But he is that guy that the fans are like, we totally accept him and we like him. And we accept him as a top-level guy. So no matter what he's doing, whether he's tag-teaming with Sheamus or he's going for the title, we accept him as that guy. So for that reason, Tom, he is kind of a valuable player because you can put him on the top of your card or you can use him, like I just said, in a utility position where if something falters at the top of your card, he's your go-to guy.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he was there at a time where, you know, the pandemic was happening. And I think that says a lot I think that says a lot, and I think that the WWE really should, you know, keep him around and give him, you know, throw him a bone. If he's asking for a certain position in the company, he's asking for more money, you know, he showed his loyalty, and, you know, they should really honestly, go with that as well, you know, return the favor.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't see him in the Universal Championship picture. Could he go against, you know, Roman Reigns? Yeah, of course he could, and fans would come see that. But they don't buy that he's going to win it. And I don't buy that he's going to win it. And if he did win it, it's going to be a transitional thing because I don't see him as that guy. I don't think Drew McIntyre is that guy. But, man, you could definitely make him an Intercontinental U.S. champion, and he would be that guy. That would be actually probably elevated to a certain extent because you'd say that's a pretty main event type name holding that belt. So I could see him doing something like that, Todd. I don't know about the heavyweight championship.
I don't necessarily like that. Like you said, like you said, Drew McIntyre, he could be a utility wrestler, you know. He could be like a bench player, but a special attraction to the WWE. For the WWE Universe as a special attraction star.
Well, I mean, even if you want to use him on top, go ahead. But my point is, if you don't have plans for him, let's just say you say, well, I don't know. I don't really have any major plans for Drew McIntyre. Okay, but as a guy who could come off the bench, so to speak, and be right at the top of your card at any time, he's your guy. He's definitely your guy. So I do think he's valuable, and I hope the WWE keeps him. I think that letting him go is probably a mistake. Probably a mistake. He suits your style very well. He suits your audience very well. Let's see what the future brings, but let's hope they keep Drew McIntyre. Now on one of these hold-your-nose moments, here we go again with Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, whatever. Sasha Banks, who fled the WWE because, Lord forbid, she's asked to actually go for a championship title, but she thinks somehow is beneath her if she's the tag team champion. Sasha Banks, who says, oh, I'm so tired of people. Airport's bothering me for a picture. She goes to Japan, where she says, oh, I'm so wonderful, I'm so great, everything's wonderful here. And now she's bitching. Now she's on her Instagram saying, I'm happy that you're so excited that I'm here, but could you please not follow me everywhere I go? Could you please not try to track down where I'm staying? Could you please not bother me? Listen, I don't want to go off here on this show because I know it gets frustrating for people who are famous to, you know, can't stick your nose out of your house. I get it. But the bottom line of the situation is you're not doing yourself any favors writing stuff like this. There are ways to handle it. And it's not, it almost looks like you're trying to self-aggrandize yourself when you write, so many people want to be around me that they follow me and they bother me 24 hours a day and I just can't take it anymore. Instead of just saying to people, look, you know, now's not a good time. I appreciate, you know, you guys being fans and everything, but you can't do this. You know, I once seen a very famous artist, Johnny Cash, doing an interview, and they said to him, he was talking about going to a mall or something, and the guy said to him, can you do that? Can you actually just go to a mall and walk around? I would think that people would follow you and pictures and autographs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. He said, well, they do it first, but the secret to that is instead of refusing to sign, just sign. He goes, now eventually everybody's got my autograph. Everybody's got a picture with me. So when I go into the malls now, I go into the stores and look, hey, Johnny, how you doing? They don't need 20. So eventually that gets old and you just become one of them again. And they just say, oh, okay, well, he's here. Not like I'll never see him again. It's not like, If I don't get an autograph now, I never will. And that was a pretty healthy attitude. She's new in Japan. If she stopped and signed a whole bunch of autographs, took a whole bunch of pictures, eventually people are going to be like, I got it. I don't need 75 of them. Instead, she decides to play diva and run from it, which makes it more appealing to people, too. I want to get her autograph. I want to get her picture. I'm one of the few people that will or whatever. And she's trying to say there's appropriate times for autographs on it. Yeah, there is. I'm not arguing the point that there are probably some bothersome people. I wouldn't want people outside my house either. But I don't think you handle it by making it public. To all you people who gather outside my house, and that's, oh, people gather outside your house? Gee, I'll have to look into that. That's a mistake. Just don't say anything. Deal with the people who are there, but don't make it public. Because once you make it public, it's even more widespread. And the funny thing is, with all the famous American wrestlers who went down there, and all the famous Japanese wrestlers have been there, I've never heard one, take to their social media to say, please don't bother me. How come? How come? How come it's only you? Get a little tired of this attitude, Mike. I mean, it's starting to wear on me a bit.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, is it New Japan she's with that she signed the contract mm-hmm. with? So they better get ready for this. This is not going to be the end of this stuff with her. We know she's poisoned herself with the WWE. She's probably never going to go back with the WWE. All right. So
right.
She's poisoned herself there, and if she's not careful, she's going to spread that poison to where nobody likes her in New Japan, and she won't be able to go back to Japan again. So that's going to be something to watch there. And one other thing on Drew McIntyre, he's got the WWE in the right position because, like you said, the WWE is panicking right now with Drew McIntyre. That's where Drew wants him to be, panicking.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that's true. I think he's putting him in a position where, they have to make a decision. Unfortunately, he's got to be careful because the WWE now, under new ownership and everything, they may not want to play those games, and they may just say, okay, go seek greener pastures. You have our blessing. One last point on Sasha Banks before we get to the other guys on the panel is this. Sasha Banks certainly is famous as a wrestler. Is she more famous than, I don't know, Brad Pitt, Sylvester Stallone, Tom Cruise? Do you ever hear them go on their Instagram and say, please don't bother me. Please don't bother me when I'm walking around. Please don't bother me when I'm eating. Please don't bother me when I'm in an airport. Please don't bother me while I'm, doing whatever I'm doing. I've never heard it, not once. I've never heard them do it. And you're going to tell me she's more famous and more sought after than them? That's not true. Thing about Sasha Banks, I don't get that. I don't get that attitude. I get that you don't want to be bothered. I can understand that and I can appreciate it. But I don't get the making it public. Sometimes when people do that, it's because they want to appear as though I'm such a big star. I'm being bothered 24 hours a day, and it makes me think, who are you trying to convince? So, Tom, this is my problem with Sasha.
Yeah, you know what's really funny is that, Sasha Banks, to me, in my personal opinion, Sasha Banks is just a diva that was in the right place at the right time. She's injury prone. She's not really that good. She's not good on the mic. She's not that great of a wrestler. She's got the looks. She's easy on the eyes, some would say. But that's really all she has. Quite honestly, going over to Japan, where the fans kind of worship the wrestlers, she had to know that going in. That's their thing. So for her to go, oh, please don't bother me, give me a break. It comes with the territory. If you don't want to be bothered, don't be famous. Don't go over to Japan. Don't go in the public spotlight. If you don't want to be followed around or asked for autographs, that's a you problem. That's a her problem. And then
the thing about Sasha is this. You're right. She's not overly great, but she tapped into a certain what's the right word for it? She tapped into a certain market, and that is that Sasha Banks hit the younger female audience exactly where they live, in the sense that she was the personification of everything that they like and want to be. You know, she had the bling. She called herself the boss. She was kind of glamorous. She had the, you know, talk and the sass and the whole thing. She epitomized a certain demographic of younger, especially female, fans. And whereas you look at Bailey, and when she was the hugger, people were like, yeah, it's cute, and yeah, she's nice, and she's like the girl next door. But they didn't want to be the girl next door. See, that's the thing. Today's younger audience, they don't want to be Bob Backlund. They want to be Stone Cold. And today's younger audience, they didn't want to be Bailey. They wanted to be Sasha. That's where Sasha tapped in. As far as her ring skills, you're right. Average. Maybe slightly above average when she's on the top of her game, which isn't often. And microphone skills, eh. But she tapped into a market. And that's very important in wrestling. Don't get me wrong. It's very important. But, again, I don't see huge Hollywood stars taking to their Instagram saying, dear fans, please, please, please don't bother me when I'm eating in a restaurant. Or when I'm at an airport. Please don't bother me when I'm walking in to get my mail or if you see me in a shop. I've never, ever heard that. But here she is doing it. She did it in America, and now she's going to do it in Japan. So I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. I do know that Japanese fans, unlike American fans, if you – I don't want to say insult them, but if they get the feeling that you are rude or in some way you've disrespected them, they're not going to forgive you like American fans. They're just going to be like, okay, screw her. On to the next person. So you might want to watch for that. Very interesting. Very interesting that she's one of the only people to do that. Now Rhea Ripley did it recently. And Rhea Ripley better watch her step with that shit. Now, she said, don't get me wrong. If I'm signing an autograph for a fan, that's perfectly fine, you know. But I know a lot of you guys are collectors. Yeah, I get it. I get it. But then don't make it public. See, that's the thing I don't get. If I was having trouble with people following me around saying, can you sign these 50 things so I can put them on eBay, I would simply tell them, my friend, I'm not signing anything because I have a limited amount of time and I'd rather sign for people who actually want my autograph to keep than I would for people who make a living getting celebrities' autographs. No offense to you, but I don't owe you the right for you to make a living off my name. So there are kids here that want my autograph. There are adults here that want my autograph because they actually want to keep it. Those are the people that I want to sign for. And I'm going to sign for those people. But I'm not signing for the guys who's bringing me, you know, eBay stuff. I'm just not. But guess what I'm not doing? I'm not then going home, opening up my laptop, and making it public. I'm not doing that because you're just drawing more attention to yourself. You can handle this, but we don't live in that age anymore. I mean, let's face it, we live in an age where there are things like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook where, you know, you can't even eat a meal without saying, here's the meal I'm eating. Okay. You know, I guess this is the age we live in. Everybody has to air their grievances to the world. But I think if you're famous, you need to take a chill pill, take a deep breath and say, I don't have to post everything on social media. I can handle this myself and not have any of the negative or even positive publicity from it. I, you know, because whatever you put, if she put, there was a whole bunch of guys who wouldn't leave me alone, tried to get me to sign things, and they clearly were putting them on eBay, and I told them to F off. 30 or 40% of the public would be like, hey, Rhea Ripley, you suck. You hate your fans. So what good is it for you to do that? You're only hurting yourself, because no matter what you post, 30 or 40% of the reaction is going to be negative. So just don't post. You have a problem, deal with the problem, don't post about it. That's my advice to Sasha Banks, too. Just don't post about it. Hi. Well, what are you going to do, folks? Anyway, it is time for...
We get letters, and the letters all have songs.
That's right. We're opening up the mailbag again, folks, and you can reach us, by the way, at WrestleChatRadio@yahoo.com. I just want to give you a few pointers on sending us any questions or anything through the email. Try to make them not so time inclusive. In other words, if you ask us what was your thoughts on what happened on Raw this week, we're not going to get to it. Because by the time we get the letter and we get whatever, it's the next Raw, the Raw afterwards. So we're not trying to ignore anybody. I'm glad everybody writes us. Trust me, I read every single one of them. But I can't answer the question if it kind of answered itself already. So if you're going to send us a question, which I encourage you to do, just make it one that we can, if it's a couple of weeks old, we can still answer it. And so now we've got enough that are questions like that, that we're going to go ahead and do this. So let me go to the first one here. This is from Matt in Grantville, PA. It says, in your opinion, should Cody Rhodes have lost his WrestleMania match? His winning the title seems like it would have been a perfect fairy tale ending. Yeah, it would be the perfect fairy tale ending, but here's the problem with that. You know, I've thought about this long and hard, and there's a good argument to be made that if you had Sheamus win, beat Gunther by beating Drew, since, you know, you're going to let Drew lose anyway, Gunther was still on pin, just not a champion. He had a legitimate gripe and could have then went for Cody Rhodes. And that would have been pretty damn good. That would have been a pretty damn good storyline. And I think one that fans would have liked. But I think the WWE understood that this bloodline thing has been so hot for them, so nuclear hot for them, that they were just afraid. They're afraid of killing the cash cow. And they already knew that, obviously, the Usos were losing. And I think they thought, Jesus, if Roman loses too, where's the story? He can't say I'm disappointed in the Usos if he lost himself. There's no more story to tell, except they've all hit rock bottom. And it's kind of over. So I think the creative probably took a look at this and said, how do we keep the bloodline story going, still hot? And they decided you can't have Roman lose. You can have the Usos lose, but you can't have Roman lose. On top of that, I do think maybe there was some question of whether Cody Rhodes could be that guy after WrestleMania. Is he going to get the same reaction? Is he going to be the guy that fans are going to pile in to see defend the title? And I think the jury's still out on that. So, yeah, you're right. If I was writing the novel, that's the ending you want. But if I'm writing a sequel to the novel, then I can't have that ending. You know what I mean? If this is a one-shot novel, Cody Rhodes wins, and that's the feel-good moment, and that's the end chapter, and hurrah, hurrah. But if I'm planning a sequel, can't win. So do I think he should have won? There's an argument to be made that he could have won and you still could have had some very good storyline, but it would have probably killed the bloodline story. I just don't think they wanted to do that, Mike. So reluctantly, I have to say, Yeah, I think he probably should have lost.
I agree with you. And here's something else to think about. He meant in one of his interview, in one of his promos, he mentioned the Chase. And I just recently saw the Dusty Rhodes A&E biography. And one of the things they talked about that was him basically, Dusty basically chasing Ric Flair throughout for between 81 and 83 or 84. And somewhere in 84, 85 is when Dusty ended up winning the title, right? But it was a big chase. And that was that win in 83, 84 was a big deal because he'd been chasing him. And he lost to Flair several times, and he'd been chasing him and chasing him and chasing him. So what I'm thinking, this is a good idea, and this could lead to them playing out that the chase sequence with Cody, just like the NWA did with Dusty and Ric Flair, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I know everybody was looking forward to that moment, and it's like a kid in a candy store. You know, you're like, I can't wait for this moment. It's going to be so big, and I'm going to jump off my sofa, and then you're like, whoa, that didn't happen. But let the story play out. Let it play out. There's a lot more to it. Cody just barely got here, got hurt, just barely returned. Give him some time to breathe. And I think maybe, I still say at some point he's going to hold that championship. It's just, maybe it's just not the right time right now. Tom, what's your thoughts on it?
I have to agree with that. I don't think it's the right time. I think the fans' reaction would have died down rather quickly because I think that because he got hurt in the fashion that he did and still wrestled, the fans had a newfound respect for Cody, for his guts, and for his heart, still did the match, and then he – rehabbed, came back, and won the Royal Rumble. He drew number 30, and I think that put a sour taste in a majority of the fans, saying, okay, well, this is kind of like the Roman Reigns syndrome from, you know, a few years back when they booed him out of the building. I don't think they wanted to make that same mistake, and I think that, you know, initially they had the plan for him to win, but as you said, if the Usos lose and Roman loses, you take away from the bloodline storyline. The way they went with it, you don't take away with it. There's still a lot of story to tell. So I think they made the right decision. Would it have been a perfect fairy tale ending? Of course. Of course it would have. I was completely shocked that he didn't win, which made for a good end to WrestleMania, quite honestly, because when it becomes that predictable, it's not as fun. So the fact that he lost in the fashion that he did, and, you know, there was a lot going on. That was a very busy match. A lot of things going on, and it really made for a fun WrestleMania. It made for that WrestleMania moment at the end where fans were like, oh, man, I can't believe that happened. Whereas if Cody won and took the belt, we ought to have been like, well, we knew that was going to happen. Predictable next.
Yeah, you get the big pop, but then again, you wouldn't get the bloodline storyline moving on like it is, Todd. So what do you think? Right or wrong decision, Cody Rhodes losing at WrestleMania?
The business point of view, I think it was the right decision to have Roman Reigns retain the belt because, like I said the other day, like a couple days after WrestleMania, the reason why they did a business point of view of a right decision because it was been sold. That's why it was the right decision by a business.
Well, see, that could be another thing, too, is that they didn't want there to be the start of a new ownership, and Roman Reigns is kind of out of the mix when he is somewhat of the needle mover here, right? That's true as well. So, all right, so that was Matt. Matt, thanks for your question. Okay, this is from Jerry in Saratoga Springs, New York. He says, I'm confused why Vince McMahon would want to sell the WWE as opposed to just air it out to his family. I think that's what everybody thought was going to happen. He was going to leave it to Stephanie or maybe Shane or combination thereof or whatever. But I think in the long run, it's almost like, try to picture this. Try to picture you're a multi-millionaire and you have this big giant mansion and you're getting old. You could will it to your kids or you could sell it and give them a large portion of the money. And you say to yourself, well, what will they do with it anyway afterwards? Are they going to stay in it? Are they going to sell it? Are they going to tear it down? Are they going to rent it? What are they going to do? I think Vince McMahon probably talked to his children and they said, look, we want to be a part of it, but if you can network a sale where we're making tens of millions of dollars and on top of it still have some association with it, where's the downside? Okay, we don't own it, but we have a ton of money from it. We're still major stockholders in it, and we're going to continue to make money from it. We're probably going to be continue to be actively involved in it. I almost call it like a reverse mortgage, where you can stay in your house, but you kind of don't own it. Well, that's sort of what Vince McMahon worked out. He doesn't own the WWE, but his relatives and you know, his son-in-law and his daughter and even his son probably, they have something to do. And maybe it's for life. Who knows? All I know is I think the reason he did it was that. I think he took a look and said, would we rather have the big money now or they can use it right now? And really, they still are active in WWE and its everyday function. Or do they want to wait till I drop dead and then just inherit this and be making money from it? So in a way, I think he figured, let me give them the money now. And it's a lot of money, folks. A lot of money. And they're going to continue to make a lot of money. So I think that's the only reason I can think of, Mike. It would be a nice inheritance, but I think they've already got their inheritance, if you know what I mean.
Right, and that's the thing. And think about this. I think within that deal, he probably knows that he's 70, what, mid-70s, right?
Yep.
He's definitely on the back nine of his life, right? He probably knows that at some point in the near future that he's probably going to end up passing away. And he's probably got it set up to where Stephanie and Shane and Triple H and, you know, will be in the company. They won't own the company, but they will be running the company long after he's passed on.
Probably at least Stephanie and Triple H will have some run in it, yeah, I would imagine. I mean, they could fire Vince tomorrow, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. And he knows they're not going to do it. And he knows they're going to basically allow him and a couple of the other people to dictate who's running it as long as things are running well. The only time he would be in danger is if they plummeted. I mean, if they went down to, we're scratching 1 million. Viewers, you know, 990,000, then people would say something's wrong and something's got to give. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So I think he said he sort of has his cake and eat it too. So Todd, that's why I think he did it. I think he realizes he could sort of have the best of both worlds, the money and still some of the power.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, he could have like both and like live, have like the best of two worlds here, the money and the power and the fourth and the fame as well, you know. It's all in one package.
And the amount of money he made was astronomical. So I think that's the reason. Tom, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's just the way he wanted to handle of what I guess you would call his inheritance, and I'm sure he spoke, probably both Shane and Stephanie, and probably even Triple H about this before the move.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did too. I'm pretty sure there was a big conversation that took place, and I think that the correct decision was made because, you know, to still have a hand in the company and make that money and still have the, you know, and still have the say-so to what, you know, the creative, the creative that goes on. I mean, really, to be honest, I mean, nothing really changed as far as who's in control. It's just the owner. It's like, okay, well, I purchased your company, but you still have everything that you had before. They didn't really lose anything. So it's a win-win for everybody. And I have a question, actually. I've just been wanting to ask for, like, the last couple of weeks. Did Vince McMahon really grow that mustache, or is that penciled in? Because he looks like he's going to tie somebody to the railroad tracks.
Yeah, no, I think he grew it. I think he grew it, and he dyed it. And he might have dyed it a little bit too dark. Because it really is. That's why it looks like it's penciled in, is because it's jet black on a 74 or 5-year-old man, and you're like, whoa, that's a stark contrast to the rest of you. But, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know what makes a guy at that age say, I think I'll grow a mustache for a while. You look like Clark Gable. You know, I'm waiting for him to say, you know, frankly, Triple H, I don't give a damn. But, hey, to each their own, right? Okay, this next question's from CJ. He's from Archer, Florida. This is a great question, by the way. He says, why with so few women's tag teams in the division will they not use people like Aaliyah, Dana Brooke, Tamina Snuka, Lacey Evans, and so many others? That's a damn good question. I don't know. The only thing I can think of is they don't think there's TV time to actually give them. But you're right. There are people just sitting on their ass. I don't even know what happened to Aaliyah. I forgot her until I heard this question. Where the hell is Aaliyah? You brought her up. She was a big deal for a while. You were going to put her with Raquel Rodriguez, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, well, she's hurt. And then she's like, I'm fine. I'm back. And back where? Dana Brooke is on the back of a milk carton. Where the hell is Dana Brooke? Why can't they be tag teams? You're absolutely correct. There is absolutely zero reason and zero motive. When you need women's tag teams like, you know, never before, you can't throw together some tag teams and give this a shot? You're absolutely right. If I'm Dana Brooke, I'm tearing my hair out. You know, some guy had a sign recently that said, give Dana Brooke a shot, and they confiscated the sign. Why can't she have a shot? Why can't you put Dana Brooke with somebody and say, let's form a tag team and let's call it a name and show them as, you know, decent or at least viable tag team? Why can't you bring Aaliyah back up? Why can't Tamina Snuka be around? There's more. There's more women that's just missing in action. You're absolutely correct. I'm dumbfounded as to give you an answer because I just don't know. I guess the correct answer is they don't want to, because that's the only reason. That's the only reason. That's why the women's tag team championship is a joke. It's a joke because there aren't any tag teams. And when they are, they're just thrown together tag teams for one or two nights or a week. When you have all that talent sitting around doing absolutely nothing, that you could have made viable tag teams all this time. So, yeah, I really like that question, Mike. I don't have a very good answer for it, but what do you think?
I don't know, you know. I don't get it. I mean, they have enough people. I mean, we've talked almost ad nauseum about the depth of this roster, even after they've made some cuts and probably going to make some more cuts. They're still a very deep roster, deep enough that you're going to have. I mean, where the hell is Carmella? You know, yeah, they've been using her, but not enough. And she's good enough to be doing something more than what they're doing with her. You know, That's another one that they need to start to think about using is Carmella. Basically, she's doing the same kind of gimmick that pamper, rich girl, I'm the boss, I'm the Staten Island queen, whatever, that what's her name, that Mercedes Moné is doing, but had been doing, but she's better on the mic and she's better in the ring. Why aren't they using these people, you know? Why aren't they using Carmella like that, you know? You could find somebody to put with Carmella. Hell, put Aaliyah with Carmella, you know?
I agree. I just don't know. It's baffling. I'm actually taking a look at the roster right now, and obviously, you know, I'm not going to go NXT, but we know for whatever reason Alexa Bliss is out for a little while, but you're not doing a ton with Candice LeRae. You mentioned Carmella. Chelsea Green is in the tag team currently, but Dana Brooke is missing. Emma is just managing Madcap when she could be potentially in the tag team. There's a ton that you're just not using at all. The only thing I can think of, I'm trying to give this guy a real answer because I'm sure he doesn't want me to just shrug my shoulders and say, I don't know. The only thing I can think of is they don't think there's enough TV time to establish an actual roster of female tag teams. I think they think if we do this, it's going to take away from the time of the solo champions to book their stuff and their storylines. And that's the only thing I can think of. Because otherwise, you're right, they're paying them to do absolutely nothing, Tom. I don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what they can do is they can think over some things that are scheduled on the show and make time for the folks that, you know, that worked their butts off and now they're just sitting back and catering. How about you take away the how about you take the 100 recaps away from the show? Like, I don't want to know what happened last week 16 times, and I'm sure neither does anybody else. Stop doing so much backstage stuff. Stop making segments where Seth Rollins comes out, has the crowd sing his song, and then say nothing and walk away. You could have honestly made with as many recap segments as they had last week on the Raw after WrestleMania. They could have brought out Aaliyah and Dana Brooke. They could have brought out several other women that have been sitting around. But let's be honest. How long do you think Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan are going to be tag champs? They're transitional at best.
Yeah, and again, B-Fab is still around. She's still there. Zelina Vega is still managing like the Latino World Order or whatever. She looks like they might be doing something with her and possibly Rhea Ripley or something. But again, Mike, they're all there. They're just choosing not to use them.
Right. We're just talking about what they got up on the main roster. I'm looking down the NXT roster. I mean, Alba Fire, Amari Miller, Amanda Grace, that's what's his name's daughter, Santino Marella's daughter. Of course, The Rock's daughter's down there. I'm just going down these list of names down there. At some point, they're going to bring them up, these people up. At some point, Indy Hartwell's the women's champion down there. At some point, they're going to bring her up, Isla Dawn. You know, I can keep going down the list of things, you know, of names on this list that they're going to eventually bring up. They're going to have to do something with these people. And then there's just not enough, unless they come up with like a women's intercontinental belt or U.S. belt or something like that, to where they have at least some secondary belt. They're going to have to come up with something, because not everybody.
See, and I don't think they can do that, because I think my point is, they don't even have time for the tag team champions. All of their efforts, as far as the women's division is concerned right now, for the most part, is around the two champions. when it comes to the tag team, they're like, oh, we'll throw together a team now and then, but we don't have time to actually have a division. We don't have TV time to actually have a division. When's the last time you really saw a women's tag team match and it wasn't like a contenders match or whatever, when it was just two tag teams that didn't have the belt? Almost never. Almost never. When is the last time you had any real storylines behind women's tag teams that weren't the champions or the number one contenders? Almost never. I mean, look, we know who the Street Profits are, right? We know who the Viking Raiders are, right? We know who the Judgment Day as a group and sometimes a tag team are. We know the New Day. We know the Usos. We know all of these people we know. And we have a feel for who they are. Even Maximum Male Models and Alpha Academy, all of them. We don't have anything like that in the women's division. We have a couple of teams. And then it's, you know, Raquel Rodriguez and whoever wants to come out with her this week. Or, you know, Kelsey Green, whoever wants to come out with her this week. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's a great question, though. I don't know the answer, Todd. It just seems like they don't have time to do it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Well, like you said, they never, back in the day, didn't really have, they sort of had like a tag, the two female tag teams back in the 80s. You had the Jumpin' Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls as the two ladies tag teams, the two same tag teams fighting over the women's tag belts back in the day. Right. The only two teams.
Right. You never really saw any storylines around it or anything. The problem is they want this all to be so equal, but they just don't have time to make it equal and give everybody storylines. They just don't. Okay. Let me go to this is Gene in Middlebury, Vermont. He said, what will it take for AEW to see their ratings climb and maintain those ratings in the long run? Well, see, I think the AEW has a problem, and the problem is I think they reached their plateau. They found their audience. Their audience is about 1 million to like 1.1 million or 2 million, and that's it. That's it. And now if you're asking me how do they bust that plateau, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough without, like, big names, more big names. And I know people are getting sick of, oh, Tony Khan, big signet signing this and big signing that. That has to stop. So I think fans are getting tired of that. But I think what Tony Khan has to do is he has to shake things up and literally say, okay, we're going to go just a little more mainstream. Just enough to attract some audience that isn't enjoying our show. But what's your name? Gene. Gene, let me tell you this. Don't know if you're an AEW fan. I imagine you are. Tony Khan did his federation no favors when he started bad-mouthing WWE and its fans. Because then I clearly saw a WWE fan say, F AEW, I'm not even watching, when they probably would have. They probably would have. And AEW fans, you didn't do yourself any favors either, saying, yeah, we're real wrestling, you WWE marks are garbage. And yet you're cheering for WWE guys that they signed over there. It's all wrestling. And the simple answer is, if the WWE can do 2.3 million, so can AEW. It's the same exact programming. It's pro wrestling. So that's how many pro wrestling fans there are. You're not getting half of them. And you're not getting half of them because you yelled and screamed and hollered that half of them didn't know what they were talking about. And then on top of it, you insulted a good portion of them. And then the truth of the matter is you're not mainstream enough to attract those fans that are just like, we want to see a big name, or we want to see something that's, I don't know, a storyline-wise that we can sink our teeth into. Your closest one probably was MJF, and he ended up being a little too adult, I think. Again, you also got to worry about that. You know, I look around the AEW audience, I don't see 12-year-old kids. I see a very succinct demographic for AEW. Whereas WWE, I see 8-year-olds and I see 70-year-olds. I don't really see that in AEW. So the short answer to the question is you've got to appeal to more people. And it's as simple as that. So let's just say you owned a business and you served sushi. And you reached your plateau of customers and you say, well, I don't know. This is, seems to be the top amount of people I can get here on a weekly basis. Maybe we should offer another kind of food too. So then if it becomes steak and sushi, oh, wow. Look, we got more people now because there's some people who don't like sushi, but they like steak. So, yeah, I think that's what Tony Khan has to do. See, Paul Heyman did that very well, even though he was a bad businessman financially. In ECW, and it always gets a bad knock, you know, you talk to ECW fans, or not fans, you talk to ECW detractors, and they'll say, all that was hardcore bullshit. That's not true. And you obviously didn't watch ECW if that's what you think. Yes, they had hardcore matches with blood and barbed wire and fire and glass, but they also had great luchador matches. They had matches with Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero that were so technical, it was unbelievable. Paul Heyman offered you up a smorgasbord of different things. It was like going to a buffet. If you don't like this, don't worry. There's other stuff. Tony Khan says this is the stuff. If you don't like it, go to a different restaurant. That's the reason. Vince McMahon's sort of the same way. I mean, you can get goofy stuff. You can get mostly storyline-driven stuff. You can get just plain good matches. Vince McMahon, yes, does hold back on the, what's the right word for it, on that wrestling purist attitude of we want 20-minute matches that are just hard-fought matches. Well, yeah, he doesn't do that much on pay-per-views and things, yes. Not so much on TV. So what will Tony Khan have to do? I think he needs to appeal to a wider audience, and that means he's going to have to change his style a little bit or get some other styles in there that appeal to a wider range of people, Mike.
I agree with you. Think about it this way. Go back to the 80s and what was going on in the 80s. In about 1983 or 84, whatever it was, there was a sitcom that started on up called The Cosby Show. And we all know what that was. And that appealed to people between 8, you know, and like 60 and 70, whatever it was, because it was a family comedy and all. But just 4 years later, or 3 years later, 1986, 87, 88, whatever, whenever it was, there was this show that started up by the name of Married with Children, right? And what did they appeal to? They appealed to the demographic of 18 to about 35. That's it. And they knew.
Yeah.
And basically, the people who did Married with Children for the Fox Network knew who they were aiming at. And they continued to aim at those people, and it became very, very popular, of course, but that's not my point. The point is, both of those two shows knew who they were aiming at, and they stuck to what they were aiming at. Basically, the Cosby Show was the WWE, and Married with Children is, you know, or was the AEW. That's what we're looking
at. Yeah, I mean, listen, you can go for a target demographic, and that's fine. But if you want to reach a plateau of 2 million viewers and above, it's almost like an amusement park. If you say, well, I opened up a great water park. It's an awesome water park, and the rides are just fantastic. Okay. But what happens if you don't like water rides? Well, don't go to the water park. Okay. But what about a park that has water park rides and normal rides? Oh, well, then that's fine. I just won't go to the water park ride. See, that's the difference. That's what makes buffets so popular. If you take a plate of food and you're like, I don't really like their potato salad, I don't really like their, you know, whatever it is, that's fine. There's 50 other dishes up there. So everybody goes home saying, oh, I had what I wanted and I liked it. Tony Khan's federation appeals to a very certain group of people. And while that group of people may consider themselves like wrestling elitists, we think we're the most knowledgeable and the most, you know, hardcore as far as supportive fans. But in the long run, much like politics, if you're a Democrat, you're voting Democrat. If you're Republican, you're voting Republican. It's the independents that decide. Well, it's the same way with wrestling. Okay? The people who are just out for a good time here and there, are they going to tune into AEW? Are they going to turn into WWE? Well, the answer's in the ratings. They're tuning into the WWE. So, number one, Tony Khan has to stop the constant announcements of, we got the biggest announcement in the history of wrestling. Stop it already. Number two, start to try to appeal to a wider audience of people, just like any business would do. If you're an ice cream shop and you serve vanilla, that's freaking fantastic. But some people like chocolate. If you add chocolate, you're going to get a lot more customers. If you add strawberry, you're going to get even more. If you have 50 flavors, you're going to get even more. That's just the way life works. So right now, he's the ice cream stand that has vanilla. Anyway, Tom, what's your thoughts on what AEW needs to do to, you know, break that threshold of their current ratings and keep them?
I am not a very big fan of AEW. I think it started off as the flavor of the week and the trendy. I think I'm going to watch this because, you know, everybody's, you know, in the locker room is going to be kumbaya. They're going to get creative control and all this stuff. And fans were appealed to it at first, but to sign big names every single week, they're basically doing what WCW did back in the mid-90s. And what their fans are doing is exactly what you said. Their fans are cheering. The WWE guys that weren't being used in the WWE, they came over to AEW, and they're like, oh, it's you know, it's Chris Jericho, and it's Mark Henry, and this guy and that guy. Oh, great. And you put them on TV for a couple of weeks, and then they disappear. And they just continue to sign these big names. Their roster is so stacked that they don't have the ability to showcase all of them. And I think you're really kind of ripping off the fans by giving them, you know, let's bring back CM Punk. Okay, well, you have Keith Lee and Miro. Why don't you use those guys? Why would you even consider re-signing CM Punk when you have guys that are bigger names, younger, more, you know, more appealing to the...
It's strictly for the name value. Now, Derek is saying, you know, the WWE scheduled their draft same day as the NFL draft. Yeah, but, you know, the thing with the NFL draft is I know hardcore football fans who are like, yeah, that's boring. I'm only interested in what my team does, and I can read that in the headlines. Very few, unless you're fantasy football players or something, is like tuned into every selection. I tried to sit through that. It's like trying to watch golf. I can't watch that. I can't. I know who my team probably is going to draft, or I hope they draft, and then I'll see that when it happens. But I'm not sitting through all this other rigmarole to see it. So I don't think the WWE figures that's going to be a huge problem for them. Okay, let me go to the next question here. Uh-oh, okay, this is going to be a controversial one, I'm sure. This is Jimmy from Henderson, Nevada. What are your thoughts on intergender matches? okay, well, here's my thoughts on intergender matches. It makes the wrestling business look foolish. It's exactly the opposite of what the wrestling business says it wants. And I think it's detrimental to both sides. And here's why I'm saying that. And I know people are going to say, oh, God, it's a misogynistic. No, it's not. Here's the deal. if you're going to throw a guy in a ring that's 240 pounds with a 150-pound woman and expect me in any way, shape, or form to believe that she has a chance, then explain to me why the UFC doesn't do it. Explain to me why boxing doesn't do it. Explain to me why kickboxing doesn't do it or pride fighting doesn't do it. Explain it to me. You're saying, well, we want to be on the same level as UFC. We want to be thought of as real athletes. Well, that real athletes don't do that. Real athletes don't do that. George St. Pierre never fought Ronda Rousey. Simple as that. So, no, I think it's absolutely stupid. It especially makes the men look dumb. But it usually makes the women look dumb, too, because of the way they have to sell. And it's usually a nightmare. It's usually a nightmare. Now, if you're going to tell me, well, how about if Rhea Ripley was to get in there and beat the hell out of James Ellsworth, that's fine, because James Ellsworth is a comedy act. And Rhea Ripley is a serious wrestler, and the gimmick is he's not even good enough to stand up to her. I get that. That's fine. Or if you want the occasional thing where Rhea Ripley clotheslines some guy, yeah, okay, that's fine. But not actually takes him on in a match. Because that's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And for the benefit of the people who say, oh, no, you're wrong, that's not absurd, let me explain something to you. We watched, literally watched, a mixed martial art woman with a record of 60-0 with 58 knockouts, who Dana White and some other people were calling the toughest woman to ever compete in any combat sport, go up against a rookie MMA guy who had no wins. And she got destroyed within moments because she's never been punched that hard, because she's never had that type of mass coming at her. It's different. Now, people are going to say it's predetermined, it doesn't matter. Well, yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter. It is predetermined. But it matters to your image. So how about if Rhea Ripley says, well, I don't know, I'll beat the hell out of Roman Reigns. Oh, okay, you can do it, but Brock Lesnar can't. You can do it, but Cody Rhodes can't. That doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry, it doesn't make any sense. So when I see that on a card, I just say, okay, well, that's just for laughs for me. I don't care if it's serious. And I know in Impact Wrestling, they made Tessa Blanchard the champion. It was ridiculous. There's some things that aren't equal, folks. Okay? Midgets can't play basketball. Why can't they play basketball? Well, because they're not tall enough. It wouldn't be fair. Ah. Well, I thought everything has to be equal. So I guess you're just going to have to lower the basket, right? Well, that's not fair. Then the taller guys could easily. Oh, well, then see, you got a problem, don't you? Not everything in the world is equal. You can't say, well, I don't know, I want to be a Major League Baseball player, but I can't hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, so I think you should have to limit it to nobody can throw above 80. It's not going to happen. Life is not equal about every single thing. A strong women's division is the greatest thing a professional wrestling federation can have. Mixing them into each other is destruction of it. And I know there's just guys out there chomping at the bit to tell me I'm wrong, and there's indie wrestlers saying, I'll proudly lose to a woman. Go ahead, idiot. Ruin your career. Go ahead. Oh, but I'll show you I'm woke. I'll show you I'm not like you. I'm not a misogynist. Okay, great. But I got news for you. If I'm in that locker room and you lose to a woman, and then that promoter tells me, you got to go out there and lose to him, I'll be like, yeah, fuck you. Okay, if he can't beat a woman, he ain't beating me. I'm not laying down for him. And that's no knock against the women. I'm just telling you, it doesn't work. Because in wrestling, you're supposed to be a tough guy, right? You're supposed to be the elite, the best of the best. They didn't put Ronda Rousey in the ring against any of the men in UFC. There's a reason for that. So I'm against it, Mike, you know, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Let me pose this question to this fellow. What happened when China fought Joey Buttafuoco?
Yeah, exactly. Ruined her career.
I mean, yeah, you could go back and say, Kaufman was going around doing these intergender matches, but Kaufman knew the sport. He liked the sport. He did what he did, and then when he got to the point where he fought this Foxy woman, you know, and I've seen the Andy Kaufman thing, and I've heard people like Jim Cornette and people like that talk about that stuff. Basically, Foxy, yeah, she wasn't trained, but she knew what she was doing, and she gave him a run for his money, and he was just a 150-pound man, you know, and that's the thing. I don't even want to see, you know, a 240-pound man go against Nia Jax, who's damn near 300 pounds, right?
Right, and that's why Dean Ambrose didn't want to do that match that they were scheduled to do. But you brought up an interesting point, so let me take it a step farther. If it's perfectly fine for men to wrestle women, then why was Andy Kaufman a bully? I guess he was just a competitor. Isn't the whole gimmick behind Andy Kaufman that he was a bully and he only picked on women who he knew he could beat? Well, wait a minute. If everybody's equal, then Andy Kaufman was a trailblazer. He was giving women a chance. He was a hero. He wasn't the villain. See how that doesn't work? Back then, when Andy Kaufman was fighting women, the cry was, yeah, I will fight a man and see what happens to you. Oh, wait a minute. I thought it's all equal. So Andy Kaufman was technically a very skilled professional wrestler who was giving women a chance early, and apparently he was the most woke of all, so I guess Jerry Lawler was the bad guy. See, that doesn't make sense. And that's why intergender wrestling doesn't make sense, Tom.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm a big fan of Andy Kaufman. And the whole all the stuff he did with Lawler in Memphis, I thought it was phenomenal. The fact that he was a bully. He only wrestled the women, and he was the intergender champion of the world until he got in there with Jerry Lawler, who, you know, gave him the free headlock, and ended up pile driving him and putting him in a neck brace. I guess I'd have to agree with you, where it would just make wrestling look absolutely ridiculous if it was, you know, if you put Ronda Rousey in there with, Cain Velasquez, who do you think's going to win?
Well, they do it all the time with Ronda. They put her in there and she throws security guards around and everything, and that's okay because that's a show. And so is wrestling a show, but these security guards aren't supposed to be trained professional wrestlers. They are just security guards. A trained professional wrestler should certainly be able to combat her. If Liv Morgan can combat her, then I would imagine Kevin Owens could. So do I want to see Kevin Owens drop to Ronda Rousey? No, I don't. Because would I ever take Kevin Owens seriously again? No, I would not. So that's my theory on it. I just, you know, you want to do some things with women hitting a guy or occasionally, you know, interfering in a match and doing whatever, I'm fine with it. But if you want to actually have intergender matches where you say, okay, on today's show, you know, it's going to be Charlotte Flair taking on Sami Zayn, I don't want to see it. I think it's stupid, and I think it's self-defeating, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like you said about this whole intergender thing, and you know, well, like you said with Lawler and the Andy Kaufman cut that feud they had, when Lawler came in, he was sticking up for the females who got bullied by Kaufman, and later on the Late Show with David Letterman, that famous slap in the face.
Yeah, and Andy Kaufman was the heel for fighting women. Now if you fight a woman, oh, you're woke and you're wonderful and you're inclusive. It's just silly. It's silly. Okay, this next one, this could take some thinking here. This is from Terry in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. He said, I'm interested in hearing you guys' top tag team of all time. Wow. Of all time. Well, he doesn't specify if you mean business-wise or you mean just the guys that I'd love to watch. Business-wise, the top tag team of all time might have to be the New Day because they have sold so much and they're merchandise giants. And they keep reinventing themselves to sell more and more and more and be more popular and more popular. They've done it for like how many years? 10 years. Name me a tag team that 10, 12 years is just as popular as they are now. So my business sense tells me the New Day. But that's not my favorite team to watch. I'm going to go really old school on you. I don't know why. I realize they weren't the world's greatest wrestlers. I realize by today's standards, they'd be considered kind of slow and sluggish. But I love Demolition. I always loved Demolition. I thought Demolition was just a great tag team. They worked well together. They were fun to watch. I just, you know, that's my style, really. I like that smash mouth sort of style that they had. So business-wise, I'm going to say a New Day. And I think that's hard to argue with. But personal preference? I'll go with Demolition. What's your thoughts, Mike?
New Day, business-wise, yeah, I get that. You know, and I think if and when he comes, both of them come back and they put them back together, then they could have another nice big run. But the other one, you know what? I really used to enjoy the Rock and Roll Express.
Rock and Roll Express, yeah. Great team.
You know?
Yeah. Great legendary team.
And basically, there was a reason why up until just recently when Bobby Eaton passed on that you could put together a Rock and Roll Express and a Midnight Express matchup, and it would sell.
Yeah.
Right? And there was a reason why the Rock and Roll Express was used at one point versus Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy when Matt and Jeff were doing the whole broken gimmick in TNA.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, listen, there's no question. As far as longevity is concerned, the Rock and Roll Express, I mean, it's still wrestling, still doing matches. So, yeah, that's an incredible team. And I know there's going to be a lot of people that say, what about the Freebirds? What about this? Yeah, there's so many. That's why it's so hard. But I just remember in my childhood thinking Demolition was the coolest thing. So I'm going to go for Demolition. You're going for the Rock and Roll Express, but we both agree that business-wise, it's probably the New Day just due to the money they've generated. Tom, what's your favorite tag team of all time?
Well, there's no question that the New Day is business-wise the top tag team as far as merchandise and, I mean, they were selling unicorn horns by the truckload. So if I say Billy and Chuck were my favorite tag team, will I be woke? I'm kidding. Okay, so my favorite tag team, honestly, I'm going to go a little old school as well. I was going to say Demolition, but I think it's a two-way tie between Demolition and To be quite honest with you, the Brainbusters, I love the Brainbusters, Arn and Tully. They were great.
I like the Brainbusters, but I never thought they were – I just didn't think they grasped could have in the WWE. There was something missing. They should have been better, and there was just something missing there. You give those two guys, and you would think that's got to be – and people are saying, Rick and Scott Steiner. Yes, yes, the Steiner brothers. I know. There's so many. That's what I'm saying. There's so many. So it's very hard to really judge. Todd, who's your favorite tag team of all time?
Well, for like the New Day, they're on the business extent. Like they sold a lot of tons and tons and tons of merchandise. And especially they had that Bootio cereal they sold too and and the pancakes on the business stand. Personal favorite all-time tag teams? Oh, man, there's so many of them. I'm going to go with the British Bulldogs.
Great team. Yeah, I mean, listen, you can't go wrong with these choices. You just can't. There's so many. And I mean, listen, you could easily say any number. You know, the Rockers were fantastic. The Steiner Brothers were fantastic. The Road Warriors haven't been. My God, they're just the. It goes on and on and on and on. Tremendous tag teams. Current, if you want to go like really super current, I have a lot of fun watching the Usos. I think the Usos are the best tag team in the world right now. New Day is certainly the most prolific as far as their sales and things. But as far as just teamwork, timing, always putting on great matches, the Usos, I think, are the best tag team in the world. But they're not my favorite tag team of all time. All right, let's move on to this is a push, keep, or fire. And this is from Jay in White Plains. He says, push, keep, or fire the following people. So I guess I'll take them one at a time. Baron Corbin. Push. I'll tell you why. I think you've kept him long enough. And he's better than people think. And he's been given shit and making molasses out of it. I'm telling you, every single time you come up with something for him, it's like, this is garbage. And he still makes it work a little bit. You got to push him, but you got to push him the right way. And the right way to push him is get the freaking guy off of this hard luck kick. Get him back to being the lone wolf. Let him grow his hair back a little bit. Do the gimmick he was doing before. Come back as a face and start kicking people's asses. And he's going to get a following. Make him just be a badass. He kind of is. The Golden Gloves boxer. He's 6 foot, what, 5? Why in the world can't you use this guy? You can't fire him. He's too valuable as just whatever you want to use him for. And if you're just keeping him, he's outlived his usefulness just keeping him. Because nobody cares now if he loses or wins. So I say push. So I'm going to go with push Baron Corbin, but change his gimmick, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with you. Change his gimmick. Have him. In fact, I continue. I don't want to say continue doing what you're doing, but at some point, just take him off of TV and have him like grow his hair out and do whatever, and then you come back and with the Lone Wolf gimmick, right? And have him, you know, knocking people out, you know, have him do that stuff. I mean, look, we know about his history and we know that, and we know, you know, if you can have people sell the woman's right, you can sure as hell have them sell a knockout punch by Baron Corbin.
Yeah, I think they're trying to be skeptical of that because of Logan Paul. They want his knockout punch to be the big knockout punch. But whatever you're going to do, he has end of days. That looks devastating. You know, you can use that as the setup, you know, the big right hand followed by the end of days and boom. The reason I say push is because every time you've given him an angle that I said, oh, God, this is just going to be terrible. It's going to be horrible. He makes it kind of like, it's not so bad. He kind of made it fun. If you can do that, then you probably should be pushed because most people can't do that. And Vince is the type of guy who likes guys that size and He's different, too, in the ring. He's not like everybody else. His style is different. I just think he should be pushed. Let me go to Tom. Tom, you push, keep where they are, or fire Baron Corbin?
Oh, wow. You know what? Push him, because, I mean, like you said before, every gimmick they've given him, and, I mean, for the past 2 years, the Happy Corbin thing where he was doing that with Madcap, I didn't right. like it at first, I'll be honest with you, but it grew on me. It really grew on me, and I'm like, this is like the a Vegas thing, which really was, it was fun to watch. And then they put him with JBL, and I was like, okay, this could be good, and they took that away as well. But, I mean, everything they've given him, he's turned to gold, and then they just kind of drop it. I say push him to the moon. I mean, honestly, at WrestleMania, it would have made more sense instead of Pat McAfee coming out. It would have been something if it was Baron Corbin. At least he's a wrestler that knocks out The Miz, huh?
Anything would have been better, you know. Right now, it looks like they're trying to do this hard luck Corbin thing again, which isn't going to work. But, Todd, I say push him. What's your thought? Push, keep, or fire Baron Corbin?
I would push him. Like you said, I think his heel run has gotten stale and it ran out. Time to turn him to a face, bring back the lone wolf gimmick. And like you said, and have him use that end of days as a devastating move.
Yeah, and you're kind of turning Madcap heel anyway, so it would be a good person to turn Corbin face off of. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Okay, his next one is Ali. Ali's a very good athlete, but I don't see any charisma. You've given him 15 gimmicks, none of which he's done well. I don't think he's very good on the mic. He's a terrible complainer, and to the point where you're actually making a gimmick out of his complaining. I see him as a guy who would go over to AEW and excel. That's his forte. What they're doing in AEW, Ali would love. So, honestly, I say let him go. I'd let him go. I don't see anything in WWE for Ali, so I'm going to go with fire on that one, Mike.
I'm going to go with fire. I always go back to, you know, his ex-tag team partner and what they're doing with him and how he's taken to that gimmick, because at least he, Monsieur, has some charisma and can pull something like that off. I don't think if what's his name was in that gimmick that he could pull that off. I don't think he could. The way Monsieur does. So, yeah, fire him.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say to fire anybody, Tom, but I just don't see anything for him.
You know, Ali never did anything for me, even when he was in Retribution. I thought it was kind of lame. And then he was, you know, pissing and moaning on Twitter, and they brought him back, and you know, they're giving him TV time every single week. Like, what more do you want, honestly? This positive Ali thing, it does not have any kind of longevity, because if you just get out there to be a punching bag every single week, fans are just going to be like, oh, yeah, this guy again? I got to go pee.
I just don't see this happen. I don't see him doing. When you give him a gimmick, even if it's a bad one, some people can make it at least tolerable. I just don't think he makes anything better. He always seems to just, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. Push Ali, Todd.
I hate to say this too, but like you said, just get rid of him. He's not.
Okay, you've got a couple of more here, so we're going to go quick so we can get to some other questions. Natty. Hey, you got to keep Natty, and you don't push her because she doesn't have a big fan following. She's not going to have that fan following. You can't fire her because she's too valuable. She trains all the other women. She's able to help bring them along or whatever. You definitely got to keep Natty. I wouldn't push her. she's right where she belongs. She's in the show, but really her main focus is to help the other women in the division along, but she's too valuable to fire. So I say keep Natty, Mike.
You keep her, and here's the deal. What is she, 38, 39 years old? You know?
Yep.
So she's probably got very little time left. Yeah, she could, for the next 10 years, she could probably train some more wrestlers, but some more people. But, you know, she's right where you, yeah, you can run her out there every so often here and there with different people. You know, she'll give you, you can put her with Charlotte. She'll give a good match with Charlotte. She'll give a good match with, she'll give good matches. You don't have her win all these matches because you're not going to use her, but she could, she's good enough to give them good matches.
Yeah, I think you got to keep. I think you got to keep Natty. Todd, what's your thought? Or let's go to Tom. Tom, what's your thought?
I say keep Natty. Natty is a good hand in the ring. She's, you know, she really is like somebody that the younger women can you know learn a lot from. She, don't push her only because. Unless WWE is going to turn a completely Canadian-based touring company, there's crickets out in the crowd when Natty comes out.
Yeah, that's because she's just been around too long. That's the thing. She's been around a long, long time, but she's very valuable, especially backstage. So I say keep Todd, but what's your thought?
I would keep Natty, too. Like you said, she could be like a bench player, like a utility player, or help put younger talent over.
Yeah, and train them as well. So, okay, this is the last one that he has. Elias. My answer is going to be tough. Either push him or keeping him the way he is just aggravating. You're doing absolutely nothing with him. You're not allowing him to show any of his charisma. You're not allowing him to use his charisma. You're just literally stifling him. It would be like saying, well, we're going to send CM Punk out, but never let him use the mic. Well, then half of his, you know, what he's there for is gone. You've taken away the ability for him to do his songs and get the audience into it and do whatever. You're not letting him win any matches. He's just going out there and getting his head kicked in. I don't see him going anywhere. If you're not going to do anything more than you're doing with him now, then, yeah, you got to let him go. However, I think he's very, very popular if you were to literally push him and let him do what he was doing. And there were times when Elias got the biggest roar of the crowd all night long. And you've literally destroyed that. So, if you intend to keep destroying it, you may as well let him go. But if you want to use him to his best of his ability and give him the ability to do what he does best, Mike, I think he'd be very valuable, so I'd say push him. What's your thought?
I'd say push him as well. And, hell, if at one point we thought that there was going to be some sort of something going on between Elias and Rick Boogs, and Boogs just came back. And
yep.
I go ahead and pull the trigger on him, no matter what it is, because I think those two guys will work well together. The gimmicks are basically the same, just about the same, you know. So, I mean, I think they work well together, but that's just me. You gotta push Elias.
At one time, he was really getting one of the biggest ovations of the night from crowds week after week, but nothing lately, Todd. What's your thoughts on Elias? Push, keep, or fire?
I would, like everybody else said, I would push him. And, you know, what they're doing with Rick Boogs, they make, I think they could be like a great, he could team up with him or whatnot, or be like a running associate guy with Rick Boogs, and you know,
You got to let him do what he does, though. You got to let him do his gimmick. If you're not going to let him do his songs and do his wacky stuff, there's no point, because then he's worthless to you otherwise, because he's not great in the ring. His charisma is his gimmick, and if you don't let him have that charisma, I don't know. Okay, we're going to do one last question. I'm sorry to the ones we didn't get. We'll get to you soon, because we want to do SmackDown a little bit. Last question is from Mike, and this is Amarillo, Texas, the great state of Texas. Will the WWE sale bring back the era of $60 pay-per-views? Well, it can't immediately because, of course, the contract with Peacock has still got to be honored. Will it eventually? They're smart. I know UFC still does it. I know. But I'm telling you, wrestling fans ain't going back. Not when they got a taste of it. Not when they got a taste of $10 a month and they can get all the pay-per-views. If you think for 1 minute that wrestling fans are going back to $60 pay-per-views once a month, they're not doing it. You will literally lose your shirt if you try that. You're much better off just renewing the contract with Peacock and if that's what it takes and getting that, because fans ain't going to do it. They're going to find alternate ways to watch the pay-per-view. There's many out there. And you're not going to get the revenue you think you're going to get. So could they do it? Yeah, I guess. I mean, the UFC does it, but I don't see wrestling doing it. I think that now the horse is out of the barn with that, Mike, and I don't think wrestling fans would accept it.
I think the horse is out of the barn with it. And frankly, I think we're looking, yeah, the UFC is doing it now, but I'm thinking now that this company owns both of them, they gotta look at this business model that the WWE's set up and say, how can we make this business model in terms of pay-per-views work for, or premium live events or whatever, work for the UFC? I think that's where that's going to go.
You might be right. Maybe they'll start their own pay service where you pay so much a month for whatever. But I it's not going to be no $60 a pay-per-view, Tom, or they're not going to get anybody.
Yeah, I mean, they will lose a good chunk of the folks who pay $10 a month for Peacock to get every pay-per-view. And let's be honest, listen, if they decide that they want to raise the cost to $14.99 or $19.99, I'd still pay it because the pay-per-views pay for themselves. Well, not the pay-per-views, but the premium live events pay for themselves, really. The only thing I would say, to be honest with you, if they're going to bring back $60 pay-per-views, then what they then need to do to justify that is to build the storylines that are in those events. Right now, they don't even need to do it.
That's the thing. The WWE has gotten lazy with that, saying the pay-per-views are going to be free anyway if you subscribe, so we don't have to make everyone spectacular. We don't have to make everyone like, oh, my God, I can't miss it. You would have to do that if you're trying to draw $60 out of somebody, Todd, so I don't think that's happening anymore.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, I will not pay $60 to rent a pay-per-view. It'd be like I'm not wasting money for that. No, that's expensive. I'll stick with like the ten dollar Peacock monthly pay per views you get every single pay.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go back to it. I want to get to the last two questions because I don't want people to be mad at me. So we're just going to take really, really, really quick ones. Do you see MJF staying in AEW or heading to the WWE when his contract is up? I think he's going to the WWE because I think he'd rather be a superstar than a wrestler. Mike, what's your thoughts?
Agreed. I think he also sees that the possibility of him really soon, him versus The Miz.
I see MJF probably leaving. Todd, what's your thought on it?
I could see the same thing, too, him leaving in 2024 to go to the WWE. And like you said, I like to see The Miz and MJF go at it on the microphones.
He's very interesting. By the way, that's from Don in Long Island. Tom, MJF staying with AEW, or you think he'll jump ship?
Yeah, I definitely think he'll jump ship, and I think where WWE is where he belongs because he's a performer, and I believe that he considers himself more of a performer and a superstar rather than a wrestler that could put on 25, 30 minutes.
Okay, and this last one is Matt in Macon, Georgia. He says, in your opinion, what is the biggest snub from the Hall of Fame? In other words, the biggest one that was left out that should be in. I said for years it's Demolition, and I'll say Demolition again. I don't know why Demolition is not in the Hall of Fame. So the biggest snub, in my opinion, is Demolition.
I think the biggest snub is Demolition, but at one point I thought, and I think she's in there, I think they got her in there or something, was China.
I don't think she's in yet, is she? That's a snub, too. I don't think she is. I think they gave her some kind of a mention, but I don't think she's in it. I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure about China. I don't think she is. Todd, what's your biggest snub of the Hall of Fame?
Beginning of the year, there were rumors for Demolition going in the Hall of Fame, and that was one of the big rumors I heard early this year, but I guess not.
No, it didn't happen. I do think that's one of them for sure. Tom, in your opinion, what's the biggest snub?
To be honest with you, I think that Demolition is my first choice, but honestly, Eric Bischoff.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one. By the way, in the chat room, you were saying she was inducted with DX as a whole part of DX, but she wasn't inducted individually. So that's, China has a foot in the door there, but not complete. And maybe there's some issues there because of the interworkings that, you know, whatever. Anyway, I want to get to SmackDown. We don't have a ton of time, but I just wanted to cover one thing specifically, and that is we just got the bombshell. We got the number one, Shinsuke Nakamura coming back was fun. That was good. We can talk about that for a minute, but, you know, listen, is he the same as he's always going to be? Shinsuke's not going anywhere in the WWE, I don't think. He is what he is. He's going to be mid-card to upper mid-card. That's it. But we got the bombshell dropped when Paul Heyman said to the Usos, Roman Reigns is growing impatient with you. That's it. That's the next chapter of the story. We also saw for the very first time Solo really give Paul Heyman the evil eye and tell him, you tell the tribal chief I got this. Looks like they're all getting sick of Roman Reigns. It looks like the storyline that we had pitched for WrestleMania is in fact going to happen, Mike. It's just going to take some time to get there. They're going to tell it slow.
Right, and now that we saw what happened with Lesnar, you know, I mean, think about it. We don't know what the actual reaction to the Lesnar thing is. We know he showed up and did what he did with Cody Rhodes, and we saw the quote surprise look on Heyman's face, you know. But if you paid attention to Roman Reigns and the rest of the Usos at that time, well, the Usos, you know, then you say, well, there. And I tell you what, I do like what they're doing. He's not going to win this feud, but I like what they're doing with – that's going to be a pretty good match. Riddle's the next MMA guy, and basically that's how they're promoting you know, what you call it. And look, with Riddle, think about it. Every time he uses the RKO, it's the guy who uses it against is done, because they don't want that thing. Just in case Randy Orton comes back, they don't want that thing to be a weak move. So every time Riddle uses it, he's done. That other guy is done.
By the way, yes, Eric Bischoff is in the Hall of Fame. I just looked it up. Eric Bischoff was inducted in 2021, I'm sorry. In 2021, Eric Bischoff was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So he is actually in the Hall of Fame. Aside from that, you know, SmackDown was what SmackDown was. We got a little bit of fun with the Solo Sikoa and Matt Riddle match. I know a lot of people said, oh, Riddle comes back and loses his first match. Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but at the same time, you're building Solo a big time. He didn't win clean, really. There was a lot of distraction. And on top of that, Matt Riddle isn't being rewarded for having to go into drug rehab. So all things considered, I don't consider that the world's worst thing to have happen. So I'm going to give that a thumbs in the middle. It didn't really bother me. What bothers me more is that they had LA Knight lose to Xavier Woods. This is the guy who you're telling me in one side of your mouth is the favorite to win the Money in the Bank briefcase, and you're letting him drop to Xavier Woods. Now, I'm not saying Xavier Woods is a bad wrestler. Xavier Woods is a great wrestler. But he's a member of a tag team, and he's not going anywhere. And if you think for 1 minute he's beating Gunther, you know, what I'm thinking is happening here, Mike, is Gunther's going to kick the living hell out of him, and we might just see the return of Big E.
I think that's exactly where this is going. There's a reason why we haven't seen Big E yet. Now, people might say, well, his injury. Yeah, but apparently from all the reports and from what we see on social media, Big E's ready. They just haven't found the optimum place to put him yet. Now, if he comes back and he's now, granted, look, this is a. We know what kind of wrestler Gunther is. We know what he does. We've seen him against Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. I don't know if this guy coming off a neck injury can take that kind of stiff stuff from Gunther, right? That's up in the air. But if that's where this is heading, I'm all for it.
Listen, the roof is going to blow off that building if Xavier Woods is getting the ever-loving hell kicked out of him after the match is over, and Big E comes out of that curtain and cleans house. You're going to hear a roar like you never heard before. Now, they could tell Gunther, listen, you know, super neck hold is out. As far as chopping him in the chest, Big E's chest could probably take a chop from, you know, a gorilla as big as his chest is. So I don't think there's any problem with the chest chops or anything like that. And he's not going to manhandle Big E with a ton of suplexes. He'll probably avoid some of them for a while. You could work a match with him for sure. I mean, if this was Brock Lesnar going up against Big E, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that's the greatest idea in the world. But Gunther, I think you'd be fine. And there's no other reason to put him against Xavier, by the way. I mean, is Xavier Woods a top contender? Of course he's not. So to have him jump into that Gunther thing, Tom, makes me think that Big E's right around the corner here.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this the other day. It's really the only thing that makes sense, and you're absolutely right. If Big E comes down to make the save, that will be the equivalent of the Hardy Boys returning at WrestleMania a few years ago, where the crowd lost their minds.
Yeah, that'll be big. That'll be big. There's no question. Todd, what's your thoughts overall on SmackDown this week? What would you give it as far as a rating?
I'm gonna give it like an A. And it
wow.
Was a,
okay.
Yeah.
And the reason why?
I think it was a pretty good entertaining show this week, like this past Monday, like Monday Night Raw, kind of.
Well, you got the return of Shinsuke Nakamura, which is fun. You got Matt Riddle in the main event, which was a good match. You got some furthering of the Uso storyline when Paul Heyman dropped that bombshell that Roman Reigns is getting tired of, getting a little bit impatient with the Usos, which was like a whoa moment. But the rest of it was kind of weak. I'm going to go and say I'm going to give it a B-. I think the things that were good, but there were things that were just kind of lame as well. Mike, what's your thoughts?
I'm going to give it a little bit better. I'm going to give it a B, and I do agree with you about the Big E deal. And here's the deal. Here's something else to think about. You could very easily see especially when Kofi comes back, because you know Kofi's coming back, right? That's not a big injury to come back from. He'll be gone for a couple of months, whatever. But you could very easily see a six-man with the New Day and the Imperium.
Yep, you sure could. I just think there's no logic to booking Xavier Woods against Gunther unless that's what you have in mind. Tom, what's your rating this week on SmackDown?
Well, I'm going to give it a B- because the only thing, there's two things that I loved on SmackDown, and that was the return of Shinsuke, which is always a good time, and the collective gasp from the crowd when Paul Heyman dropped the bombshell. That was like, oh, okay, I didn't see that coming, and that was cool. So I'll give it a B minus because everything else, honestly, I don't think it was as good as Raw. I think they kind of dropped the ball with SmackDown a little bit.
And I see that if Xavier Woods has to go for the championship against Gunther, he can't lose to LA Knight. But that's why I'm saying it's like a chain of command. Why Gunther versus Xavier? And then if you say because we're setting him up for Big E, oh. And then you got to give Xavier a win so it makes him look good, and we might as well do it against somebody we haven't built up that much. So how about LA Knight? Okay. But to be honest with you, there were other people in that locker room. Why didn't you give Xavier a win over them? LA Knight's very popular. You heard the crowd. Listen, the crowd almost never turns against Xavier Woods. Whoever Xavier Woods is in there with, they're with the Xavier Woods 100%. I would say it was like 40-60. And you very seldom see that. So L.A. Knight is getting over on his own, Mike. He's starting to become popular.
Right, and that's the thing. And we've seen this happen before with different people where, oh, they're getting over on their own, and they're getting popular, and the WWE kind of, you know, doesn't do away with it, but just kind of squashes it, right? You know,
yeah.
And it's like, why? If you're getting popular organically, and that's what's happening here. This guy is getting popular organically. It's not them trying to make him popular like they did with Roman Reigns. No, this is them. This is organic what's happening with LA Knight. And to tell you the truth, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they look, LA Knight's got to be saying, look, I'm getting popular, we got to do something with me. I can't be losing this much this soon. Now,
this is the type of guy, Mike, that if you're going to use him right, you give him a really good 5 to 6 month run as a heel, where he tells off, mouths off to all the good guys, all the faces, cheats to get over, but gets over on 95% of them. Super mouth almighty where, you know, nobody can get a word in edgewise, and he's always getting the last word on him and whatever. But then you have him run afoul of a heel, because then the audience organically says, oh, shit, he ain't going to take that from them. He's too big of a mouth almighty to take that from them. He's going to tell them off like none of these other faces ever did, and he'll cheat to win if he has to. So now the heel's going to get a taste of their own medicine. That's how you handle a guy like L.A. Knight. Make him very relevant as a heel, and then put him up against someone the crowd really doesn't like at all. And watch how quick that crowd will back L.A. Knight to the max in that feud.
Absolutely, but again, they kind of miss that thing, because right now it's a very organic that he's getting popular. The crowd is doing it. The people are doing it.
I know.
And, you know, and so, like I said, they missed that chance to do exactly what you said, but because of the crowd.
Yeah, they're really, and the WWE sometimes resists what the crowd wants. How many times did we tell them to turn Roman Reigns heel, and they were like, he's going to be the biggest face in history, and you're going to cheer for him? What happened? We didn't. What happened when you listened to the crowd? Oh, he became one of the top guys ever. Ever. So that should tell the WWE something. You resisted turning Roman Reigns heel. It was all about, no, this federation is going to be built on face Roman Reigns, and you're going to cheer for him, and he's going to be your hero. When you finally decided, you know what, it ain't working anyway. Let's give the fans what they want. This guy rose to what heights? LA Knight has a chance. You know, he's not a young man. You got to start doing this. And he can't turn him face against a heel if he's an incompetent heel. You got to start giving him some big wins. You got to start giving him some big wins and erase all these ridiculous losses that he took, Tom. Otherwise, nothing's going to work for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And LA Knight, the pitch black match with LA Knight and Bray Wyatt was, to be honest with you, I believe that was a mistake. If you feuded LA Knight with somebody else, I think he'd be a little bit more popular than he is now. But those fans are really taking to him. And, you know, to make him that popular organically through the fans, you know, that's really saying something to his ability.
Well, we'll see if they think enough of him to actually put him in the Money in the Bank match, let alone win it. And we'll know a little bit more about that in the weeks to come. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for your questions, by the way. We'll do this again soon. It was a lot of fun. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.